at nationals.com.
This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to For Your Benefit. We're here this morning to talk about all things thrift and in particular, automatic enrollment. And to automatically answer all your questions, Greg Long, Executive Director, Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board. Did I say that right?
You did.
Oh, my goodness. I was practicing before you got to the show. Tom Tribuco, Director of External Affairs for the Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board.
Again,
right?
You got it right, Bob. Thank you.
Oh, my goodness. Now it's easier. Tammy Flanagan, Senior Benefit Director, NITP, Weekly GovExec Columnist, Seminar Presenter, and good friend. Good morning, Tammy.
Good morning, Bob.
And where are you, Ann?
I'm over here in the corner, Bob.
Okay, Ann Vincent. And what do you do again?
Director of Business Development.
I do that every show, anyway, for NITP. Good morning, Ann.
Good morning, Bob.
And let's go. Automatic enrollment. What is automatic enrollment?
Well, automatic enrollment, it starts today. Today being August 2nd, the first business day of the month. And what that means is any new employees in the federal government, anybody who started work, actually the first payday yesterday being the first day of the pay cycle, if anybody who started is now enrolled in the Thrift Savings Plan at a 3% deferral rate unless they opt a different number. So they are they're in the TSP. They actually might not know it yet because it might be a few weeks before they get the statements from the TSP and from the organizations they work for. But we are planning on having a whole bunch of new people in the TSP and helping them save for their retirement.
What fund does it go into or funds?
Well, we did have to select a default because these are individuals who have not affirmatively told us exactly where they want their money to go. And because of that, the default is the G fund, the never has a bad day G fund. And that was done after a lot of discussion. But we talked about where that money should go. And so it's then the safest fund we have.
Go ahead. I was just going to ask how they came up with the 3% rate rather than the 5% since you get the full match on the 5. Was it for a specific reason?
It was actually debated back and forth. Mm-hmm. And the 3% rate, well, long story short, is that at 3% what we had is a few people saying it was too low and a few people saying to us it was too high. And therefore, if you got people complaining on both sides, you're probably
right. You hit the nail on the head.
Yeah. And the logic behind it is for the FERS population, the 3% gets you to what I call the fat part of the match. It's
right.
the 1%, the dollar for dollar portion of the match, where the fourth and fifth deferral percentage gets you the 50 cents on the dollar. So this gets you the fat portion of the match, and it just feels right for a lot of folks.
Yeah.
We do have the flexibility, by the way, to go to a higher number, to go up to 5%.
Right. I was just going to point out the man next to me is all too modest. He has the authority to set that that rate anywhere between 2 and 5%. So he's the man with the power on this, the executive director.
So if he gets feedback from the employees saying, well, why didn't you just put us in at 5, then if that becomes consistent, you could raise it in the future if you wanted to.
We could, exactly.
Okay.
And that's why it was built in, to give us that flexibility. I anticipate that we'll see how this works for a couple of years, see what sort of response we get, and then make some decisions going forward.
And this was all part of that, I guess, the tobacco bill from the year before. This was all part of that legislation. So you do have the act of Congress behind that, along with a lot of other changes that are now taking place.
That's correct. President Obama signed the Tobacco Act a year ago in June, and the included within that is the automatic enrollment provision for the TSP, among several other different features.
Did the IRS weigh in on any of this 3 and 5%? Because it sounds a little bit, I'm not saying they did, a little bit like the private sector. There's a safe harbor that if you match up to 3%, then the higher paid can put in more. I know you don't have those discrimination rules that the outside does. And then 5% is another milestone with them?
They did not weigh in. Although, I mean, I'm familiar with the safe harbors that are in the private sector. This is something that we do really in conjunction with the board that I report to and with the Thrift Advisory Council, that the union leadership for the most part. And we said, what's in the best interest of our participants and beneficiaries?
And my comment shouldn't be meant as negative because the IRS says you have to do this if you try to dog it otherwise, which you all don't do.
Exactly.
So you don't have those kind of restrictions that private industry might take advantage of employees.
Right. One thing you might find interesting, Bob, is that that safe harbor, that 3 to 5% safe harbor on private sector plans, is actually modeled after the TSP. Hmm. As you recall, we do have the exemption from the non-discrimination testing for a number of reasons, mostly, though, because there is salary compression in the federal government, which you don't have in the private sector, which is what those non-discrimination rules are intended to address. So it was in the 90s after we got up and going, and private sector plans went to Congress and said, "Hey, you know, you've exempted these guys. How about us? Yeah, because these tests are difficult to run." And Congress looked at it from a policy perspective and said, "Well, they've got a point. You know, if you're going to be in that range, then if you're matching dollar for dollar on the first three or the full five, then you're in the safe harbor range."
Yeah, and however you cut it, it's fantastic.
Yeah,
and it's up and it's up and running today, right?
Up and running today,
and that would cover anybody hired starting today. They come on board. That's the employee that will start having the automatic withholding.
That is correct.
Okay. That's right. No reach back to people who are previously.
I mentioned that in the seminars, the audience, it's like this big sigh of relief. Like, finally, that's a good. You know, they're very positive and. In hearing that that's going to happen this month.
Well, we spent a lot of time asking our population, you know, what do you think? What are about these changes? And there were some pros and cons, but the feedback that I got most clearly was, hey, I wish somebody did that for me 20 years ago.
Exactly.
And so that's, I think, a very important step we're taking today.
It reminds me of the government life insurance, because you were automatically enrolled in basic life, and if you don't want it, you have to opt out. So I think this is the same idea.
Exactly. Yeah, very similar approach.
Okay, as the money starts to go in the funds, I'm just going to take a quick veer off and go towards the end of the questions. We get emails, and we talk to people. Why don't they have more of this? Why don't they have more of that? And one was actually pretty good, and it says, with the baby boomers becoming of age, has there been a discussion about a health care?
Investment option.
Yeah, and I don't know. I know the headaches you all have to do that, but do you ever look, and what does it take to add a fund or to delete a fund?
Well, we do talk about our investment lineup regularly, and usually every couple of years we'll have a formal review, which we'll sit down with our outside investment consultant and say, let's analyze the marketplace, let's analyze the economic conditions and whether or not it makes sense. Specific to the healthcare fund, that is a sector fund, and really the TSP's design is broad-based indices, and we've eschewed any look at any sectors because it's just narrow, and therefore exposes people to risk. And I agree that, you know, there is some logic for healthcare funds today, but in the past there has been some logic for why not an internet only fund. And there's a reason why we didn't pursue that, you know, in 1998.
Or the real estate investment trust.
That was the thing of the early part of the century. 3 years ago, yes. And so I think our policies and the way we're structured for broad-based slices of the entire marketplace has served us well, and we anticipate it's going to serve us well going forward. So I don't think you're going to see a change in our approach. However, we could have funds added, just as we've had the I fund was added, the S fund was added. It does require an act of Congress. And that's when Tom Trabuco gets very active in working with our authorizing committees. And we have legislation put forth. There is discussion back and forth. And only when it's signed by the president do we have the ability to do that.
And the selection of the G, another question was, what about a TIPS fund? But the G isn't a TIPS fund per se, but it probably performs.
What's a TIPS fund, Bob? For us non-tax people?
Yeah. Treasury Inflation Protected Securities.
Okay. Whatever that is.
Yeah. Well, what it means in short is that for people who anticipate that we're moving into an inflationary environment, a TIPS security, a Treasury Inflation Protected Security, gives them some protection.
They effectively rising inflation rates.
Yeah, as the purchasing power of a dollar decreases with inflation, a TIPS security has a greater return. So you're protected.
Inflation has nowhere to go but up right now.
and that is the thought, and therefore the logic behind a TIPS fund. And we did, I mentioned earlier that we have a formal review process. A couple of years ago, we went through this exercise and said, does a TIPS fund make sense for the TSP? And we looked at it and said, well, the G fund and the unique nature of the G fund in that it has a rate which looks at Treasury securities 4 years and longer. So it has a TIPS, an inflation protected benefit built into the G fund. Mm-hmm. And therefore a TIPS fund, while the logic makes sense, the G fund already really answers that question. So we decided not to pursue a TIPS fund.
Well, no, that's good. And the G fund, I think, is all inclusive. It may not be exactly like a TIPS, but certainly you can. What's the rate of return on the G fund now, Tammy? You know,
about 4% over the past 12 months, somewhere around in the fours. I've been watching.
July of 2010.
Okay.
Yeah, so yeah. It has ranged over the since this year in 2010 between 3.5 and. Down to as low as 2.6, which is where we are.
So interest rates were still falling this year a little bit.
The point being, though, you can't find money like that easily anyway, and you can't find demand money like that. And what I mean by demand in the G fund, you want to leave it in, you want to take it out in a month, fine. But to get 2.6, 3%, you're locking that money up for 5 or 7 years.
We went to open a CD. I'm thinking, oh, a five-year CD, we'll get a great rate. It was like, I think 0.8%.
Yeah,
well, like, that's it.
That's right. And that's not lost on participants.
No.
I see here that 46% of the TSP investments as of the end of June were in the G fund.
Do you find, is that a higher percent than what it was during the heydays when you couldn't lose by going outside of the G and, you know, everyone was in the C and the like?
Or, yes.
Yes. And do you see, I won't say a seismic shift, but do you see a shift now to people chasing the F fund? Because it's done so well.
There have been, well, I'll answer the first question, have we seen a seismic shift? No, we've seen movement and substantial movement. So in the, if you took a look about 3 years ago, you'd probably see about one third of the fund in the G fund and the F fund. Now you see about half of the total TSP balance in the G and the F.
Do you still have a lot of people who kind of just do 100% G because they're so afraid of risk at all? I know at one time there was a portion of accounts that were all just G fund only accounts.
We do, and I actually anticipate that number is going to grow. And the reason why I think it's going to grow is because of what we started today, automatic enrollment. And automatic enrollment defaulting to the G.
Yeah.
And there are some of those people are, quite frankly, not going to look at it, and therefore we'll have a greater number. However, I think it's better that you invest something in an investment which might not be exactly the right fit for you than invest nothing.
Exactly.
And so we would like people to invest at the greatest level that's comfortable for them and do it in exactly the right place for their age and risk tolerance. That's not going to happen, but we're going to do our best to get as close as we can.
And you got to get them in the pool.
Yeah,
you got to. I don't want to go in the pool. It's too cold. I'm afraid. Can I go back to the F fund? Not to be on the F fund, but I think the F fund of the five is probably the most misunderstood. Not because of anything you all did or didn't do. It's just
people don't understand where bonds fit if they have the G fund. I think.
Bonds can never go down, and look, they're going up. But what would happen if interest rates? If we had deflation, the F fund would probably just skyrocket. But if we have inflation, the F fund doesn't like that. Probably they like it less than the market does. And I think people don't understand it because it's totally the inverse. As interest rates rise, the F fund initially will drop in value and then it'll start to pick up. As interest rates drop, it goes up. And you go, how can that be? Well, it's fixed in interest. That's how I try to explain it anyway. And it's a good percent government, but it's also corporate, but it's not Sam and Sally's sub shop either. It's big corporations with AAA rated paper, I would guess.
Well, it follows what used to be called the Lehman Aggregate Index, Lehman Aggregate Bond Index, now called the Barclays Capital Aggregate Index, if I have that correct. And it does have a place. But you're right. The inverse relationship between bond prices and interest rates is something which sometimes people don't fully understand. We do have a relatively small allocation to the F fund within the TSP, and I think that has a lot to do with the people who typically find a bond appealing, find the G fund better meets their needs. Not always, but there is a logic behind the relatively small allocation to the F fund.
All right, I just had to say that because people start talking about the F fund in class. Look what it's done. Why? And then you try to explain, and they go, "But why?"
What about the people in the agency? Like, what if I'm not in the accounting or the finance department? I really know nothing about investing, but I know that I need to save. Like, how do you counsel, or how are agencies supposed to counsel employees about how to manage their money? Is it more or less just a fact of either hire help on the outside or use the L funds? Because I notice agencies are very careful about not giving financial advice because mm-hmm. they're not in that business.
Well, we are. The way we've responded to that, which mm-hmm. is the educational, the fact is most people don't do this for a living,
right?
Which we recognize and the agencies recognize.
I might be a Forest Service employee who spends all day in the forest, but I know I have to save for my retirement.
And the way we responded to that is the L funds, the life cycle funds. Mm-hmm. And so the message that we deliver to our participants is, look, if you don't have the time, if you don't feel comfortable making the decisions of which baskets, which fund do you want to put your eggs in, and then on an ongoing basis figure out how many eggs in each basket and how to move that over time.
Yeah, that's complicated stuff. Yeah. It could be.
Yeah. The way we've responded to that is to create the life cycle funds, the L funds, figure out which year you're going to need the money, 2030 or thereabouts, and that's the fund which is most likely appropriate for you and your risk tolerance. However, if you want to do the homework and you want to sit down and you want to sit down with a financial advisor or somebody else that your agency provides guidance through, great.
Or if you have other money besides what you're saving in the thrift, you may need some outside help to manage everything because that may not be your only investment.
And that is an important point, mm-hmm. Tammy, because we don't know everything. As a matter of fact, for these people, we only know one thing, which is their age.
Yep.
Now, that might be the single most important factor. But if they inherited $1 million from great-grandma and they have it invested somewhere else, we don't have a clue, and our funds don't take that into account.
Right.
Do you track where the money goes? For example, the thrift annuity, again, seems to be a mystery to many that I talk to anyway. Mm-hmm. And the thrift annuity, now somebody might say, I don't like it or I love it. But do you see, as a percentage of the money when people retire, does it stay in the thrift? Does it go to an IRA? Does it buy the annuity? Or is it impossible to know?
Well, it's we are doing some homework on this, and we've started some. Is if you take a look at the total population of TSP participants, we've got 4.3 million participants, which is just an enormous number of people, an enormous responsibility.
Astounding.
Yeah, and over a million of them. Yeah, just think about this for a second. Over a million of those 4.3 million are separated. Those are people that could take their TSP accounts tomorrow. They could withdraw them and put them anywhere they like. They have decided to stay in the TSP. And that is, I think, a clear message from our population that they're happy where they are, and that's great.
Greg, does that number include the uniform services, the 4.3 million?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, it does.
That's all the TSP accounts.
That's everybody. Mm-hmm. However, there anybody who does separate could take their money out. And so we did take a look a couple of years ago at, for somebody who separates in a particular year, how many are likely to roll it to a different provider. And it's about one-third. So one-third of the separated people said, we want you to take our TSP account and move it to Bank X or Mutual Fund Company Y, and we executed that transaction for them. What I don't know is, I've got to get a much bigger data over a longer time period to figure out what the
what the trends are.
The trends are. Mm-hmm. And we're
And a lot of those rollovers might be employees who are just changing jobs, who are putting it into their next employer's 401k.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they could be people that are, you know, separated. But we don't have enough granular data on that yet.
I find in class, somebody will speak about a friend that they love the thrift, but they find if they want a periodic distributions just to take it, that it wasn't available for them. And that's no disrespect. You can't do that because of the transactional cost. Mm-hmm. So they take a piece of the thrift and they put it over in the IRA and use that. You know, they need the roof fixed or the transmission fixed or the car fixed. Mm-hmm. And there it is without having to fool around with monthly payments. And they're very happy that the thrift is done, everything it's done. But then they have access to, again, demand money. I want to go on vacation, and I don't quite have enough. There it is.
We sometimes refer to it as the Winnebago fund.
Okay.
Yeah. And we do allow a partial withdrawal, a one-time partial withdrawal. It's not the first time I've heard people say that we'd like more flexibility in our payments. We do offer periodic payments, so you can get a monthly withdrawal, or you can get an annual withdrawal, or you can get the we can allow a mixed withdrawal, but there is not unlimited flexibility.
Okay, you might get mad at this one. When you talk about it in class, the people say, and I said, listen, I call it opportunity 1, 2, and 3. This is 3, the series of monthly payments, and you have 2 options. The A options, where it's kind of annuitized, where it's based on life expectancy, but you're in the bus and somebody else is driving, and you can always get off the bus and move into the B side. But I said, I really think the B is better because you can make a walk and quack like A because you're in control of the annual calculation. But let's say you hit a bump in the road and you do need a car. Mm-hmm. Well, jack your monthly payment up for 3 years or however long it takes to car off, and then bring it back down. Mm-hmm. And don't get mad at me with that. And they kind of got it 2 or 3 times because they can move it around.
Once a year, as long as you know that the once a year requirement. And I think do we allow that just around December and January, or
right now it does occur just in December, but we are planning to spread those out over the course of the year.
It'll be on an annual basis
on the anniversary.
Is the pay date for those payments always the first of the month, or are they staggered? Do you know how
they
works?
Are staggered throughout the month? Yes.
Okay.
But I think it was doing some PR for you, because
otherwise
that money might have gone to an IRA.
I appreciate
it. Not that that's bad.
Well, and one of the things we always try to remember is, you know, we spend a lot of time worrying about other people's money. It's their money. It's the participants' money that we work for. And so they can always take it, you know, as long as given the rules. But we try to make this the most appealing place and look after solely their interest. But if somebody wants to take it and move it to their broker, fine.
It's other people's money. Many years ago when I first got out of school, there was a book on how to make money on OPM.
Yeah.
And I go, does OPM lend money for investing? And this is other people's money,
yeah.
OPM.
not the Office of Personnel Management.
Yeah.
What about the in-service withdrawals? Has that been a popular thing for people who are still employed? Because I know in my seminars, since we do a lot of pre-retirement, and the age range could be anywhere from mid-40s to late 70s. So someone who doesn't really want to retire from federal service, they like what they're doing, but I know there comes a point in time where they could do an in-service withdrawal if they want to either spend some of the money or reinvest it somewhere else. Is that a popular option for employees?
Well, what I think it serves is to allow people to know that, you know, for hardships, or if the age 59, the age base, 59 and a half withdrawal, that it gives you the comfort to know that if you absolutely need the money, you can get it.
Yeah, and if you don't want to leave federal service just to get it, you can do it while you're still working.
Now, the hardship withdrawal, of course, requires you to demonstrate hardship.
Right.
But if you get into a tough spot and you need those funds, there is a mechanism by which you can get that money and remain in service.
Yeah, I always think of that with an employee who might be ill and they're on leave without pay and they can't take a loan, so at least it gives them some access to pay their bills.
That's right. And sometimes people just don't need more debt. You know, they need to get out from under it. You don't need another loan.
Exactly.
If you're already overextended and are paying an awful lot back and a lot of interest, you just need to get that lifeline, get back above water, and proceed from there, even if there is a tax hit involved.
I know the loan program is also popular. And the question I get from employees is, when I leave federal service, how do I keep paying off my loan? What do I do? What are the options when somebody leaves the government and they're still in the process of paying back a loan? Do they have a choice? They can do it.
Yes, there is a mechanism by which you can actually send in personal checks.
That's a one-time TSP will take a check.
And we do have a separate lockbox set up for that. But we don't encourage loans, and we certainly encourage people to pay them back as fast as possible. Because
keep it tax deferred.
Yeah, long term, it's in your best interest to not be borrowing from your TSP account. But there is a mechanism by which you can actually pay it back post separation.
Can I ask a question? I don't want to put anybody on the spot because I don't know the answer, and I should. If somebody does leave federal service and is not aware that it's going to create a taxable event if they don't pay the loan back, how long do they have after they leave federal service to pay the loan back? Because somebody told me the other day 90 days.
60 or 90, I forget.
I would think 60, because the IRS rule is you have 60 days. It's effectively you got the money and you have 60 days to move it into an IRA. People don't look at it like that.
This would be the point where I call my inside tax attorney or admin folks and ask them. I'll have to get back to you on that one.
Well, I don't know the answer, and I are one, not a tax attorney.
Let's take advantage of the big picture that these guys know, because what I'm interested to know is what's on the horizon, because I know the one thing we talked about last time was the ability to transfer possibly part of your lump sum annual leave check. And I know Congress had that on their slate this year, and it wasn't going anywhere. So
that's right.
Is that perking along at all?
Well, it's still alive, although there was a serious obstacle placed in its path when the Congressional Budget Office priced the proposal. As you know, part of the legislative process is when a bill goes through a committee and is approved, it then goes to CBO to take a look at what the net effect is on the revenue and spending of the nation. And in this case, there was a cost of $317 million involved that would have to be offset. And just to refresh the outlines of this proposal, this would allow people when they separate to contribute to their TSP account from the value of their unused terminal annual leave, not to be confused with sick leave or any of the other types. It has to be leave that is
when you leave the government, you get paid a lump sum for your unused leave.
You get cash for it. And just like any other contribution then to a cash or deferred arrangement, which is what the TSP is, you can either accept the cash or you can defer receipt of it and send it into the
trust. I think
a
lot of employees weren't even aware you couldn't do that, because when I tell them that, you know, you can't, and they're like, what do you mean? That's my pay. Well, it's not basic pay, so therefore it doesn't meet the definition.
Right.
So that would change that, but it's still not really.
We're still not quite there yet. There. And as you know, time is getting short in this Congress. But I do expect there to be some more attention paid to it when Congress gets back after the
I've had people who said they would even delay their retirement waiting for that to come through.
Yeah, it's a nice little boost, and it's something that's currently allowed in private sector plans, and many of them do offer it. But it's just a quirk of our existence that something that's allowed under the regulations, since we're a statutory plan, we have to get statutory authorization for it, and the statutory process is subject to these offsets where you have to cover the budget expense.
And the other thing that already changed last year was the 401k option, or the Roth TSP 401k, whatever that is called. That's still something that's kind of down the road, right?
That's right. Yeah, that was part of the Thrift Savings Plan Enhancements Act, which Greg was talking about earlier. It was kind of Title IV, I think, of the tobacco bill. And that is authorized. We've been taking each of the elements of that bill in orderly fashion and working it with the rollout this month of the automatic enrollment program. We're now going to be able to focus on the Roth, which our timetable is to allow people to make decisions about Roth in December of 2011, those decisions taking effect at the earliest in January 2012.
And that would just be new money. You wouldn't shift money that you had tax deferred to the after-tax pot.
That's correct. That's not permitted under the tax code.
Right. And only active employees, because only active employees can contribute. So I've had people retiring say, can I do this? No, I don't think you can do it after you retire.
That's right.
Okay.
We had an email, thank goodness, and the email question goes back to our first subject, and it's really good. Some people will be automatically enrolled in the TSP starting today, but they don't know anything about how to move the money around between the funds, especially since all of their money is in the G. So the question is how can they learn to move money around, and can it be done online?
Oh, what a segue to the new website.
Wow. I want to thank whoever sent that note. The first thing is, you know, for every new participant, we send a welcome letter. And everyone who's automatically enrolled, it'll be a customized welcome letter, letting them know exactly the phone numbers, the website address, and some basic material about the TSP and how to use it. And the as Tammy mentioned, last month, we launched a completely redesigned website. So if you go to the same old address, www.tsp.gov, and you haven't been there for several weeks, you will find a very different look today than you saw before. We spent about 2.5 years working on this, and with focus groups and talking to designers and then working with all the tech people. We are very happy with the result, and we've come up with a very modified educational campaign that I think fits around people's lives, so that we've said it. You know, if you're starting in federal government, or if you're getting married, or if you're considering leaving, an educational message designed around the way people live. And I think you'll be very pleased with the ability to access the information you need with just a few clicks.
Could I ask you two things on that? One, I promised I wouldn't.
Okay.
The shading on the site, and you told me that it's now darker.
Well, what we did is... what I try to do with my team is make sure that we're always listening. You know, we get a lot of ideas from our participants, and some of them we listen to and we say, thanks, but no thanks. And some of them we listen to and say, you know what, that's a great idea. And one of the pieces of feedback that we got was the navigation on the left side of our new website was not quite as easy to read as it should be. So over the weekend, we put some changes into production, and one of those is a change shading on our left side navigation.
Oh.
You will see continual changes on the website as we continue to listen, continue to make changes.
What are some of the capabilities of the new site that the old one didn't offer? Because I see a lot of the same things. You just have to, you know, find where they are and get used to the location. But are there some things that this site will do for employees or separated employees that the old one didn't offer?
The capabilities of what you do are not dramatically changed. In other words, you still go, you check your balance, you can see what the performance is, you can make changes at your interfund transfers or contribution allocations. It's how you get there and the education, the effectiveness of that tool in helping you make good decisions. Mm-hmm. And the look is dramatically different.
Yeah, it's very nice. I like it.
I think it's logical now. But I will say that In addition to a whole lot of positive feedback, we've got some negative feedback as well. And I'm actually not surprised by that, because it's one of the things I inform my board about, is no matter how good it is, we will still get some complaints. And that is because for people who have been there and know exactly where it is and how to find this and this and this, they now have to find something new.
Mm-hmm.
And so it will take a little while before people get used to it.
It's change.
Yeah, it's change.
Some people don't like change.
Some people don't like change, but this is very positive change.
Okay, and I always like negative feedback because I learn from it.
Right.
So it's always something to show me where I need to improve. So I think it's good that you allow people to feedback and you listen.
Yep, and one of the things we're working on is how do we better allow feedback, and so we're working on that right now.
Okay, so here's a question from a technophobe, me. If you go to the website and you just want to look at rates of return, not necessarily yours, but just rates of return, do you have to log in? Is there a place to just click on and says rates of return?
Anybody who wants to go to TSP.gov can look on and receive anything on our non-secure section, and part of that is rates of return, certainly. If you want to learn about the funds, if you want to get the educational message, if you want to hear about the history of the TSP and the leadership of it, that's all available to somebody without an ID and password.
I'm glad you said that, too, because that goes back to the other question with the automatic enrollment. If somebody wanted to learn, they don't necessarily have to go to a seminar, although I know you provide speakers to do this. They can go online and read about the funds, and it's easy for me to say, because when you start talking about some of these funds, people go, what? But in our class, oftentimes there's somebody that's been either before or after we make the presentation from you all.
Mm-hmm. Well, but we're happy to do that, and we actually next week I'll be getting on a plane, going out to one of the conventions and doing a seminar just like and partnering with somebody just like you, Bob.
Mm-hmm.
Well, kind of like you.
Okay, thanks.
Not as good as you.
There's no one exactly.
Nowhere near.
For the people on radio who didn't see that, I just got a funny look.
I remember it was a number of years ago. Penny was in a class, and they told me that she was going to be in the class, and I didn't know she wasn't Penny. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking for on the 10 cards, Penny, because I didn't want to say anything wrong, and I wanted to make. And she was right up front, and we've become, I would say, good friends. She always got great answers. I emailed I don't bother you all too much, but I emailed something in that was just way out there, and she just nailed it. Yeah. And she goes, "No, these people are not this." And I go, "Oh."
Penny and I, Penny Moran, who's our director of participant services, and I will be speaking, I think it's next week, out at the National Association of Letter Carriers. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I'm looking forward to doing. Yeah, mm-hmm. Thrilled of doing those sorts of events.
Yeah, and they appreciate you coming, I'm sure, too, because you do have an air of transparency, and I think people can appreciate the fact that you're not afraid to give us numbers and tell what the TSP is. It's public information, and you share it, which I appreciate.
We work very hard in making sure that we are an open book.
Mm-hmm. And you speak English. In other words, you don't speak basis points and standard deviations of the mean of whatever.
I can speak that, too.
I know you can speak that.
We were talking early before the show about the numbers and how I wrote about, how many people are millionaires in the thrift. And I think it threw some people off guard to think, well, why aren't I a millionaire in the TSP? And I think the conclusion was it's almost impossible at this point after 23 years to be a TSP millionaire. The people who have even 500,000, most of them have it from bringing it from other employers. Is that right?
Yeah, that's our information. We don't focus too much on who's got the
who's
biggest
the millionaire?
Account, who's the millionaire. What we're focused on is who is eventually providing themselves with the financial ability to retire comfortably. And we do certainly have some accounts that are in excess of $1 million. Mm-hmm. Most of those, by looking at it, we know were supported by outside money. Mm-hmm. I think it's important to remember that the TSP is 23 years old. And so therefore, nobody has had the TSP for a full career. If you think
I think people forget, too, in the beginning, it was restricted on purpose for how much you could put in and where you could invest it. So even if you took full advantage of it, I think it would be difficult to have anywhere close to that at this stage in the game.
Right. I think I did hear somebody say that they were a homegrown, quote-unquote, millionaire in the TSP. But I don't really want to spend time focusing on that. Whatever it is, we do have a lot of people that are making really smart decisions and have grown their accounts to the point where we look at it as analysts and say, yes, they've got the resources to support their other income and live comfortably. And that's a success for us.
And one other thing, and you've done just such a great job on uncovering this, Tammy. Remember, the TSP is not a thing unto itself.
No.
It's part of a thing. And that whole thing, which is known as the FERS retirement program, is a three-part program. It includes both the base of Social Security, a defined benefit plan where you accumulate 1% in guaranteed annuity payments for each year of service, plus the TSP, where for FERS people you pick up the agency automatic and matching contributions as well as your own. So it's really the three elements working together that provide you with the retirement security that you need after a career. Too many people, I think, for understandable reasons, focus on the TSP because there's something.
Keep up with the Joneses thing. We want to know what our neighbors have that we don't have.
Sure. But while that's going on, you're quietly building up a basic annuity that after 30 years is going to be worth 30% of your high three and indexed to inflation, although not fully indexed. Mm-hmm. The arrangement they came up with in crafting it was quite good. The percentage, it's a CPI minus one measure of inflation protection, but the 1% that you lose is the percent between 2% and 3%. And that was done intentionally. Again, it was a scoring issue where, since the assumption was that inflation would be over 3%, you still got a 1% reduction in each year of scoring. However, it's not that first percentage point of inflation where you're guaranteed to lose it every year.
Mm-hmm.
It's the one between 2 and 3. And for instance, this year, I don't think the FERS is going to lose anything.
I don't think so either.
Vis-a-vis the CSRS in terms of
its. It doesn't look like we're going to have much inflation to speak of.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, so there are these design elements that went into it that show that, in my view, the Congress really did a terrific job in putting together this package, and it has stood the test of time, albeit not yet fully mature, because, mm-hmm. as we know, a federal career is at least 30 years. I know there are law enforcement folks and others, but what they have to look at if they've got a shortened career is the follow-on job. Mm-hmm. That's also part of their working
career.
Life.
Yeah. Exactly.
Could I make a comment and then ask a question? Here's the comment, and I find most of the people in the classes are not aware of this, that you can move money from a traditional IRA into the thrift, the taxable portion, not the non-taxable. And they go, no. And I go, yeah, they actually have a form for this, and I have it in the presentation materials,
TSB 60,
and you have to sign a little affidavit that this is what you're moving in and not the non-taxable portion, just the taxable portion. So it actually can benefit people that are retiring between 55 and 59 and a half that want access to their money. They can move the money out of the IRA without a penalty and then start withdrawing it from the thrift. But also, if they're really enamored with the thrift and they're not doing so good on their own, they can move it into the thrift.
Mm-hmm.
That was just a comment. Here's the question. Do you have a picture of what the account balance of somebody that might be 5 years out of retirement would be? I mean, that's pretty hard to say that the average person, but because we're talking about this, that it would provide a cash flow for somebody for life. You know, people want to say, well, I want 7 figures. Well, you can't have 7 figures in most cases, but, you know, 5 figures, probably.
Mm-hmm.
6 figures, hopefully. But is there a stat on that?
We did take a look at that, and that's from a couple of years ago. This is actually 2007 data. People that are between 50 and 59, the average balance was $97,000. But I caution to look at that as a full picture. And the reason why is some of those people we know started working for the federal government, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. We don't know how many. And so we don't have a full picture on the data. And some of the people, you know, we know, like Tom mentioned, law enforcement people that are going to move from this career to a different career. And there's a whole bunch of different scenarios that, you know, people's lives might put them into that bucket.
And I explained, too, to employees in seminars that FERS was a more portable system, and I'm seeing that in my mid-career seminars where I'm thinking mid-career is going to be someone in their 30s, but oftentimes it's someone who just came into federal service at age 59 mm-hmm. from private industry, and they're going to spend, you know, the end of their career in the government, and they just want to know more about it. So, again, I guess it is difficult to look at those numbers and say, is that someone who's preparing for retirement? Because it could be any stage in the game almost.
Yeah, I think about myself. You know, I've been doing this now for 4.5 years, I was in the private sector. I didn't become a Fed until I was 39.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an example of somebody who, if you took a look at my TSP account, would not tell the full picture. You know, I've got monies elsewhere in my other 401k accounts. And Bob, to build on your point, the IRA money you can move in. You can also move in any eligible plan, which means that somebody like me who has a 401k or had a 401k at a different employer, that money can come into the TSP as well. For people that recognize that the TSP is a low cost, quite frankly, elegant design, and you have dollars in IRAs or previous 401ks elsewhere, the TSP can be your aggregation source where you can get the best deal going.
Yeah. And I like what you said about the 401k, because, again, a lot of our work is pre-retirement. But as Tammy said, we do mid-career. We do beginning career. And we used to do thrift programs, and don't get mad, still do, but not many. The point being is if somebody left federal service, went to another job, had a 401k but didn't like the choices and what they could put the money in a very safe environment, and then if they had distribution opportunities, moving into the thrift.
That's right. And one of the groups where we view looking down the line where that might be real attractive is for these uniformed services members. If they are not going to be automatically enrolled, I should mention that was discussed, and in the end, Congress was not ready to do that for the uniformed services. We'll be back taking a look at that probably in connection with the Roth, when we put the Roth up, because that is something that would be very valuable to uniformed services members, and where the leadership over there at the Pentagon has indicated an interest in that. But otherwise, for all of the young men and women in uniform who participate, and I think we've got over 700,000 of them. I think we just crossed 700,000 this past month. If they keep their TSP account when they leave the uniformed services, that can become, as Greg said, the aggregator for all of their retirement savings throughout their coming career, which, you know,
that's what I think a lot of people don't realize. Even if you spend a couple of years in federal service and you establish a TSP account, that's yours for the rest of your life, as long as you don't deplete it.
That's right.
And they can accept other money. And that's where that low administrative expense comes in handy, where you can take advantage of that with your other money.
Exactly, especially over a 30, 35, 40-year period. You know, those just like the miracle of compound earnings grows your account, the pain of compound cost detracts or subtracts from your account balance.
Well, let's go back to the military folks or the law enforcement folks that retire before 55. And there's a penalty issue if they take the money out in general, but in specific, there's ways around it. Affectionately, they call this the 72T rules. Let's not do that because we'll lose the audience. But I was at a seminar, it's large, it was over 200 people, and a number of them were young. And this one person said, I can get at my retirement in the thrift at 50 because I have 20 years in service under this provision. I don't want to say the agency's name. And I go, I look like the RCA dog. And I go, yeah. And how does that work?
Well, you would pay taxes on it.
And you
would pay a penalty on it. It would be an early withdrawal. The ways that uniform or that either the uniformed services members or the law enforcement, firefighters, and others with you know, the early retirement provisions can get at it without paying the penalty tax is to take it in a stream, as you refer to it, the 72T. You can do that either through the TSP annuity, through monthly payments that are calculated based on the IRS calculation.
Life expectancy, yeah.
Right.
Kind of a life expectancy table.
Right. Mm-hmm. Or you can, of course, take it out by transferring it to an IRA. None of those would be the latter would be not be a taxable event at all. The first two, it would be a taxable event, but it wouldn't be subject to the early withdrawal penalty as long as you were taking the payout over time. There is a provision in the Pension Protection Act of 2006 that has been misinterpreted. What it does is deal with defined benefit plans and allow people to withdraw from those defined benefit plans for certain purposes, and I think it has something to do with insurance, paying insurance premiums associated with your job.
Yes, they get an extra tax exemption if they're PSO, public safety officer.
Okay.
And it's very sensitive, and this is where Penny just nailed it. There's a public safety officer issue. I'm going to put people to sleep with this. And then there's a public safety employee. No Fed qualifies under this provision for public safety employee. It's only non-Feds.
That's right.
Then the other thing, too, is, and I don't want to put anybody to sleep with this, but we talked about these 72T rules, and there's three different ways to do it, and I'm not going to go through any of them. I would suggest anybody.
Thank you.
Because I'd lose everybody in the room, maybe me. But there's a website called 72T, and there's actually a calculator on it, and two ways you can get a lot more out than the annuity stream if you annuitize it. And that's as much as I want to say, because somebody maybe very young, law enforcement, they don't want to go to a second career. They're burned. They worked hard. They put their life on the line every day. Uniform service, same people. And they go, I was really looking forward to this, and now you're telling me I have to pay a penalty. No, you don't. Here's a way around it, and here's two other ways around it. Perfectly legitimate. None of this fringe stuff.
That's right. And all of it geared to providing security over a period of retirement, not a chunk of dough, you know, and that's what the tax, what those laws are set up to guard against.
Right. One of the questions I had before, I know we're getting late in the hour, but when another change that took place last year was changes in the beneficiary payment. So when somebody passes away, whether they're still employed or whether they're separated and they still have a TSP account and they've either named a beneficiary or by federal precedence it goes to your spouse, if your spouse inherits your account, do they have to take the money out or is there a change in that that allows you to do something else with it?
Well, this was one of the things we had discussed with the Employee Thrift Advisory Council a couple of years ago. And that council is the predominantly the union leadership, but also several other groups, including Department of Defense. And one of them had come to us with that specific concern. He said, you know, if I died, my wife would need to take my account as my beneficiary and move it to someplace that's more expensive. And so we did some homework, and we eventually determined that we could do this, that we could have my account transfer to my wife inside the TSP. And this is one of the things that was also in the tobacco legislation. Mm-hmm. And we created a mechanism today to kind of an interim mechanism. By the end of the year, we'll have a process set up where the account can be put in my wife's name. So she's the beneficiary. She has the benefit of the account, but she does not need to take it out. Therefore, she gets the benefits of the TSP's terrifically low expense ratio.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Yeah, if there is a death in, let's say you're the spouse and you don't know anything about the TSP other than your husband or wife had one, is there a place on the TSP website for life events or where somebody can go to find the form they need or the phone number they could call?
That's one of the things we're doing right now as far as putting the educational message for life events up there. You'll hear more about this beneficiary account as we formalize it towards the end of this year. So we're working on the educational message around that.
But right now we're able to work at a retail level. Each time that we're notified about the death of a participant, then we send out to the beneficiary, the spouse beneficiary, information saying here's what you can do if you want to leave your funds on account here in the TSP, and then later in the year we'll be able to give you your own account.
So for that spouse, the account will stay tax deferred like it would for the employee or the whoever had the account. And can they make the same withdrawal choices?
Yes.
Like buy the annuity or take the monthly payment if they want to?
Absolutely.
Or just leave it tax deferred?
That's right, or just leave it tax deferred. Right now, the one restriction that's on it is it can only be invested in the G fund, but that's until the end of this year.
Once you finalize everything.
That's right, until we get the final structure up.
Tammy writes on this an awful lot, changing designated beneficiary forms, and she talks about the movement. This is huge.
That's just something we neglect to do. We intend to do. We have good intentions because we got married or we had a child, but getting around to filing those forms sometimes slips our minds. I always try to give reminders so that we keep our wishes.
Or the reverse happens, heavens forbid. But the point being is she's a proponent of educating.
Yeah. Anybody who's worked in benefits knows that people forget to do that, and it's usually too late by the time you realize it.
That's right.
Private industry, I don't think, gets that. I mean, that money's got to get out of there. And again, we're talking about our surviving spouse.
Yes. Yeah. Well, we did when we looked around, though. We found some plans that actually did this out there in the private sector. So that's when we concluded we can do it. Then it was a question of should we. And as Greg said, the groups that comprise that Employee Thrift Advisory Council, these are people who are elected by federal employees and postal employees, and they come to us with a special knowledge of that population and what their needs and desires are.
Yeah. Is there going to be an L-2050 this year?
There is, yes.
Okay.
What we're working on now, today there is an L-2010 fund, and this is 2010 right now that we're in. And so as the end this December comes, you'll see that fund close down, and in January you'll see the L-2050 fund launched.
So is that when you're going to retire? Anyway, we have to get off the air. We're going to be retired. Gentlemen, thanks.
Thank you.
Always great. It went awful fast, didn't it, Tammy?
Oh, always. I love this show when we have the TSP. It's fun.
And thank you for being. And Julia, bye-bye. See you next week.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NI.